Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Congresswoman Kathy Castor's live telephone town hall conference call. My name is Laura Hopkins. I'm the Deputy Chief of Staff for Congresswoman Castor, and I'll be your host this evening. Thank you for taking the time to join us for this community conversation on gun violence prevention, protecting our country, communities, families, and especially our children. We hope that you will find this call informative and useful. In a moment, the Congresswoman will join us with some opening remarks. We are also pleased to be joined by several special guests this evening, City of Tampa Police Chief Eric Ward, Reverend Kenny Irby, Community Intervention Director in St. Petersburg, Freddie Barton with Hillsborough Safe and Sound, and Dr. Carolyn Collins of the Citizens Review Board. You will be hearing from all of them soon. But first, I want to explain the format for tonight's call. If you'd like to ask a question or share your story, it's very easy. Just press zero on your phone at any time, and a member of our staff will assist you. Again, just press zero to ask Congresswoman Castor a question or share your story. This is a live question and answer session with Congresswoman Castor. In a few minutes, you'll have the opportunity to hear and speak from her directly. Remember, if you'd like to ask a question about gun violence prevention or let us know what's happening in your neighborhood, please just press zero on your telephone keypad. You'll then be transferred to one of our staff members who will take your name and your question. You can also press zero if you would like to simply leave a comment or if you have any issue that you need help with. A member of our office staff will assist you. We'll try to get through as many of your questions and stories tonight as possible. To help us accomplish this goal, we must limit all callers to only one question and ask that you keep your comments brief. If your question is chosen, your name will be called and you will be asked to repeat your question for the Congresswoman. So the lines are open right now. All you have to do is press zero to ask a question. We're going to get started with the program. We're going to begin with Congresswoman Castor and a few words from Chief Ward. So thank you, Congresswoman, for hosting this call. Please go ahead and begin.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight for our telephone town hall on how we prevent gun violence in our community. All across the country, communities are coming together to discuss recent tragedies in Orlando, Dallas, Minnesota, Baton Rouge. We've seen injustice and inexplicable actions caught on video. We've seen mass killings with military-style weapons. We've seen our police officers come under attack for simply doing their jobs and protecting us. So we need to have a conversation about how we prevent gun violence here in the Tampa Bay area because we're no different. And the good news is there are a lot of community organizations and efforts and churches that are coming together to take action. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, about what's going on in your neighborhood. But I want to hear from you directly this evening. Tell me what's on your mind. Ask me some questions. Like Laura said, just press zero on your telephone to be directed to a member of my staff who will help you. You'll get in the queue, and then we'll take your question. And we're very fortunate tonight to be joined by a lot of community experts. First is going to be Tampa Police Chief Eric Ward, but before I turn it over to Chief Ward, I just want to say that it's been only 6 weeks since the Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting, and I know that has really devastated so many families in this area because that's our sister community just up the road, just up I-4. When I returned to the Capitol after the Orlando tragedy, there were many of us who were very frustrated that we were going to have another moment of silence for a shooting. And so our frustration led to an organized effort by civil rights icon John Lewis to bend the rules in a way, to sit on the House floor and demand action, call for action on sensible gun safety legislation. We simply wanted to vote, a debate and a vote on background checks and keeping terrorists on the no-fly list from being able to purchase military-style weapons. So the leadership would not allow us to have a debate. They turned off the cameras. They used late-night maneuvers to keep us from having a vote. But we're not going to give up. And what I'd like to hear from you tonight is what you think is the most effective, what we should be doing in Congress and what we should be doing in our community to make sure a tragedy like that never happens in the Tampa Bay area. So I want. We're also going to have an online poll during this call. Do you believe that Congress should debate and vote on gun safety legislation? Press 1 for yes. Press 2 for no. We already sent it out in an email today. I hope some of you have answered that. But I'm going to go ahead now and turn it over to Tampa's Police Chief Eric Ward. Chief, thank you for being on the call tonight. And can you make a few comments about what's happening here in the city of Tampa and your sensitivity to how many of our neighbors feel that they're not safe to oftentimes when it comes to law enforcement?
Well, it's important. And well, first I want to say thank you for having me. And I'm excited about being a part of the conference call. We have worked very hard at this agency, making sure the officers had the resources necessary to make sure that they're trained properly. When I took over as chief about 15 months ago, that was one of the areas I wanted to focus on, because making sure the officers had the proper training that can help them effectively do their job. So we've introduced some training to the officers that I think was very beneficial. We focused on bias-based policing, racial profiling, Holocaust training, ADA awareness, diabetes training, as well as dealing with the mentally ill. And I think that's reaped dividends on our encounters that we have with the general public. I'm not going to say that we're perfect. This is a work in progress, and we work very hard to make sure that we maintain our relationship with the community. I'm always open for ideas and suggestions. Everyone knows that I have an open door policy. As well. I get several emails a day and phone calls with members from the community, both positive and negative. But I have to be open to those negative comments. That's the only way that we can identify those problems and move forward with our progress.
Well, you grew up here in Tampa, Chief. You know the neighborhoods out there, and you know there people have watched these shootings across the country, and they feel like there's a difference between neighborhoods and how people are treated based upon their race. What can you say to our neighbors tonight, besides maybe go into a little more detail on the training and body cameras and sensitivity and how you assign your officers out on the street?
Well, I think it's important as we move forward. Tampa was no different than Ferguson. The only difference was we went through our Ferguson back in the late 60s, early 70s, but it was a lesson learned. So for the last 30-plus years, we focused on building and maintaining that relationship with the community. Like you said, I grew up in Tampa, so I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I can tell you that we're far from where we used to be, and we're moving forward with progress. I think having these officers engage the community, having the community identify them as human, not us against them, because we're all in this thing for together, this crime fight, and getting the community engaged is the key. Our agency is roughly 1,000 police officers, but it's over 357,000 citizens in Tampa. And that's the only way we're going to win that crime fight. We have to be a partnership with our community and develop that relationship and get the community involved in helping us solve those crimes. That's how we're going to win the fight.
Great. Laura, I think we should probably take a couple of questions. Maybe the chief could take a couple of, or if folks want to make a comment, press 0 to get in the queue to ask a question or make a comment tonight.
Great. That sounds great, Congresswoman. And again, thank you, everyone, for joining the call, and thank you, Chief Ward, as well. Like the Congresswoman said, please just press 0 if you'd like to get in the queue to ask a question. Congresswoman, our first question comes from Gary in Tampa. Gary, you are on the line. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yes, good evening. Good evening, Congresswoman Castor and Chief Ward. I had a question about what kind of federal resources the Tampa Bay area could use as far as protection, as far as i.e. schools from the university level on down to the elementary level, and then public places where mass gatherings of people would be. I think that's the one thing that we've learned from these other tragedies is that the more eyes and ears and properly trained people that are out there, How can officials like yourself help us with that federal money and maybe a mandate to get more protection out there for people to maybe just have a little bit more of the eyes and ears and some really good trained people to look for that?
Thank you, Gary. I'll let you know there are significant U.S. Justice Department grants that come to the Tampa Bay area. They're competitive, and the dollars don't do everything they need to do. Most of our most of law enforcement here at Tampa Police Department, Hillsborough County Sheriff, St. Pete, Pinellas County, that's funded by local taxpayers. You know, we'd have very good partnerships in the Bay Area with federal law enforcement, the FBI and the ATF, and unfortunately, the trend over the last few years has been government shutdowns and slashing of budgets. So I've been an outspoken advocate, especially for our U.S. Attorney's Office and FBI and federal law enforcement, to make sure that they have the tools they need to keep us safe. And Chief, maybe you can comment on what more the federal government can do with a lot of the Justice Department and other grants.
Well, I guess the key is a lot of the grants have pretty much gone away, which we had to change gears and kind of redeploy our resources. Our biggest asset is our community. You see something, say something, and then, of course, we'll do something about it. The whole aspect of the terrorist shootings, the mass shootings in big, huge places, malls, schools, stuff like that, as it relates to terrorists, I'm not concerned about that. What makes me lose sleep is those lone wolf individuals that sit at the computer and get radicalized and go out and do something as simple as, drive a dump truck or a pickup truck over 80 people, killing them. That's what makes me lose sleep. Those are the things that you can't predict. That's why I lose sleep over them. All we can do is make sure that the public is aware and they're involved in the crime fight. When they see something, they need to say something. Those little things can make a difference in someone's life, and that's what we encourage the public to do.
All right, we can take the next question, Laura.
Great, thank you. The next, I would like to just put one more reminder to, if you just joined the call, to press 0 to get in the queue to ask a question. Our next question comes from Kenneth from Tampa. Kenneth, you are joining the call right now, so you'd like to go ahead and ask
Hello?
Your question. Yep, you're on the
Hello?
Line. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello. My concern was with police officers and all the friction that they're having around the world with that, And since I moved to Tampa here 20 years ago, I realized the police officers, they're doing much better than what they were doing then, because they had Central Park Village then. That's where I was living at over there at that point. And the police was doing wonderful at that time 20 years ago. As long as you respect them, they respected you. Some people, I don't care what type of job you have, every job will have a bad apple in it. So they can't throw all the weight on the police officers. They can throw the weight on, they expect the police officers to be their teachers, their fathers, everything, too much for the little pay they get. They are survivors. I think Congress should get more involved and pay them a decent salary, because they put their lives on the ground every day for us. And that's about it.
Thank you, Kenneth.
Thank you.
Laura, we can probably take one another.
Perfect. Hold on. Our next question.
Please press 0 if you'd like to ask a question or make a comment.
Okay. Our next question comes from Chase. Chase, you are joining the call right now. Go ahead and ask your question.
All right. What I was requiring about is it possible that you can have the gun manufacturers to chip those guns that they're manufacturing so you can better track those guns, as well as all those who have license to carry guns or have a gun, period, the way you can have them to come in and have those guns chipped so the police department can better track these guns. That way, when they pull up on the scene, they would know exactly where the guns are located in that area, because they would have not only it would be chipped, but they would be able to register it right up under this screen on the computer, showing that the guns are out there, and they can know who's carrying what if it's already been chipped. And that way they can also track the guns as well.
What do you know, Chief? Can they chip the guns these days?
Well, I know the gun manufacturers have been working very diligently and trying to come up with some technology, whether it be thumbprint ID, that meaning if you purchased a gun and it didn't match your fingerprints, the gun would not work. I know they're looking at things like that to across the board, but, you know, the key is whether it has a chip or not. You know, we've taken over 1,000 guns off the street last year. And the equation to that is that we got to have, if you're going to purchase a gun, you got to be a responsible gun ownership. I cannot tell you how many guns are taken out of vehicles that are unlocked. Yeah. You know, people purchase guns and they have a misconception. It's not a toy. People need to treat them like they're firearms that will hurt someone. And the kids that are going around taking these guns out of cars, they're not breaking windows anymore. They're just pulling door handles, and when the doors open, they rummage through them and find whatever they can, and typically it's a firearm and loose change and jewelry, and those guns end up on the street. Like I said, we've taken over 1,000 guns off the street last year as a result of that, and that's a direct reflection on responsible gun ownership.
Well, Chase, I can tell you in Washington it's very frustrating because the, you know, just some common sense things like background checks, and passing, even debating, let's get to a vote. That would be pretty basic on keeping folks on the terrorist no-fly list from being able to purchase a gun. The NRA has completely shut this down, and that includes the safe gun technology that you mentioned. There's simply no discussion in the halls of Congress on that, unfortunately, and that's one reason we sat in. I think, Chief, I want to let you know how much your neighbors value everything that law enforcement does to keep us safe in this community. And I think we'll move on to one of our other expert community members, but really know that we value everything you and the force does. And that goes for St. Pete PD and our sheriff's departments as well.
Thank you.
Okay, so we want to have a discussion as well about what is going on in our neighborhoods to keep us safe as well. And that means talking to young people, trying to keep the guns off the street. And I've asked a number of community experts to join us. Reverend Kenny Irby is the Community Intervention Director in St. Petersburg, and Freddie Barton is with Hillsborough Safe and Sound. And then later we'll hear from Dr. Carolyn Collins of the City of Tampa Citizens Review Board. I think I want to start with Reverend Irby. Reverend Kenny Irby, St. Petersburg is doing a lot in the neighborhoods these days in partnership with community groups in reaching out to young people. Can you tell us more about what's happening in St. Petersburg?
Sure. Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We are here in St. Petersburg. We have, in this position I've been in 7 months now, we have launched a couple of really exciting initiatives that are yielding very good results early on under our MBSK umbrella, the My Brother's Sister's Keeper initiative that Mayor Christman accepted back in February of 2014. And we rolled out 3 weeks ago our first community canvas and what we're calling our community accountability campaign called Not My Sons, which is an initiative to stimulate a safe St. Petersburg for the summer and to be exactly as Chief Ward alluded to, create partnerships and intersections between the community and law enforcement, and the private sector, and the faith community as well. And so what we're doing, we have a pledge card that offers ways that parents and youth can be more responsible. And our first challenge to young people is that they won't resolve conflict with a firearm or a weapon. And that has really been a really positive touch point. We have yard signs. We have window signs and T-shirts, and every Friday night we have a group of 25 to 50 people who go out in varying communities just to have conversations and stop, talk with neighbors, a few law enforcement officers, the community policing officers, our cops on patrol, which are clergy on patrol, just community members going out, talking to folks, and stimulating conversation around what it means to be responsible and how to overcome conflicts without negative consequences. The other thing that we have going on here in St. Petersburg, which is exciting, is our police chief, Anthony Holloway's initiative on Park, Walk, and Talk, where we're going back to community, old-fashioned community policing, which is fundamentally about rebuilding and establishing relationships between the police officers who are sworn to keep the peace in their communities and citizens. Because we've seen most recently here in northern Miami another police shooting, very questionable circumstances. And so there's reason for alarm in our African-American and Hispanic communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you hear, Reverend Irby? Are people trusting of City of St. Pete police officers when your community members are going out? Are they skeptical? Are they scared? Or are they engaged? What are you hearing?
I am finding extremely positive affirmation. As a matter of fact, I was a couple minutes late joining the call because I was just with Chief Holloway at a community forum at Bethel Metropolitan Church, about 40 members of the congregation in this community. Wanted to have more conversations. People have seen the signs. They've seen the chief in the communities, and they are concerned about what is the proper protocol now for, particularly in this forum we were in, what's the proper protocol for an African-American young man stopped in a police car? Because people are confused largely by the most recent Castile case. Here's a place where everything was followed ostensibly by textbook. You know, the young man identified that he had a concealed carry permit, was in conversation, and still ended up being shot by the officer. So people are talking about, and what I'm finding is people are talking about cases that are not here in St. Petersburg and Pinellas County, but they are concerned what preventions and what provisions are in place so that those things are less likely to happen in their own communities. And I think that's a fair challenge, and I appreciate both of our police chiefs, Chief Ward and Chief Holloway, for their transparency and their willingness to be courageous and to go into the communities and participate in dialogues like this and others.
And Reverend Irby, if someone wants to get involved with you and what's happening in St. Petersburg, how would they reach you?
Well, I'm very pleasantly surprised. There are a couple of people on the call tonight who have reached out to me, and we've been in conversations, but you can reach me through the St. Petersburg website. I'll be glad to give my number offline, but the most effective way right now is through stpete.org/MBSK. You can go to the current campaign, see our literature. You can actually download our pledge card, which we're offering anybody to use in your own way. You can see the communities for the next four Friday nights where we'll be canvassing. And I'd be glad to partner and have conversation and offer any sites as necessary.
Well, thank you.
Mayor Bob Buckhorn. Thank you for calling the City of Tampa. We are continuing to improve our services and make our
city work. Reverend Irby.
We're doing more to provide better services for residents and to attract new.
We're going to let that. Okay, good. I want to remind everyone to please press zero to ask a question or make a comment before we take another comment. I'm going to cross the bay over to Freddie Barton with Hillsborough Safe and Sound. Mr. Barton, can you fill us in on what's happening Tampa and Hillsborough County in our neighborhoods to make sure young people especially, but everyone understands and can confront what's going on with guns on this side of the bay?
Absolutely, and thank you for putting this forum together. You know, with Safe and Sound Hillsborough, it was established in late 2013. Commissioner Kevin Beckner at that time wanted to create a solution to community violence, and it was done as a result of the shooting at Sandy Hook. And, you know, starting this, the collaboration includes the mayors and police departments of Tampa, Plant City, and Temple Terrace, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, the School District of Hillsborough County, the 13th Judicial Circuit Court, the State Attorney's Office, the Public Defender's Office, Hillsborough County Government, the Children's Board, the Health Department, the University of South Florida, and numerous agencies and faith-based organizations that do vital work in our community. And all of these groups and organizations came together to address the factors that contribute to violence and also that address these generational biases that cause these plagues to happen in our community. We are supporting the efforts to reduce gun violence in our communities by working with our youth. We first completed youth mock trials in four different areas of Hillsborough County, in East Tampa, in the University area, in Plant City, and Waimama. We work with more than 100 youth and expose them to the harsh realities of gun violence in their communities, as well as address the no snitch rule that's plaguing our streets. Chief Ward said it, if you see it, say it. There is no such thing as it's bad to snitch, because this can protect the life of someone that you know. Whatever it takes to prevent the next teen from acting out his or her frustration and anger in a hail of gunfire. We also, for parents and community residents in general, we're working to create a marketing campaign to address reducing the accessibility of guns. Again, kind of piggybacking off of Chief Ward, especially over the summer months, we always see an increase in car thefts and break-ins, and youth involved in these crimes are finding guns in unlocked glove compartments. And, you know, in 2015, we had over 200 criminal cases against juveniles in Hillsborough County that involved guns in some form or fashion. And some of these were theft of unsecured firearms. So we're working with creating PSAs and different media related components to work with law enforcement agencies and also to identify resources to provide gun lock boxes and educate parents and community residents on how they can secure their firearm away from the eyesight and hands of kids. We also know that in order to really address gun violence and youth development, we have to focus on out-of-school opportunities, making sure that kids have something to do when they get out of school. You know, we also, you know, as Reverend Irby talked about, Mayor Buckhorn took up the challenge, the My Brother's Keepers Challenge, and the City of Tampa is a My Brother's Keeper city, and we use Safe and Sound as the platform for that. So we release funding for community-led projects in East Tampa, the University here, Plant City, and South County. Want those community-led projects focus on residents leading community action projects, not government, not quasi-government, but residents coming up with their projects, creating the outcomes, because no one can truly change a community like the community. One of those projects led to the birth of an East Tampa Youth Leadership Council. It's a group of middle school and high school students that came together from different neighborhoods. Typically in East Tampa, you have a dynamic where these kids are different from different neighborhoods, but they ride the same bus, go to the same school, and they have fights that break out. So we created this Youth Leadership Council where these same kids now are coming up with community improvement projects. On July 30th, they're holding an event here in Tampa at Cyrus Green Community Center, and they're going to start with a unity march in East Tampa, focusing on how law enforcement and community can work together. So we're wrapping our hands around our kids and around our youth. We also know that in order for our youth to have a bright future, we've got to all come together to find solutions instead of pointing fingers. It all begins with a conversation. As Reverend Irby said, you know, they've had plenty of town hall forums. Chief Ward really took this serious and held several community forums throughout Tampa to talk about solutions. We're doing the same thing and partnering with our agencies and starting to have listening sessions. We've got an initiative that we're branching out, Hillsborough Speaks, and we're going to address how both community and law enforcement can participate in the healing process. There's responsibilities on both sides. We're going to facilitate the discussion by not putting law enforcement on one side of the table and residents on the other, but sitting amongst one another, sitting side by side, listening and working together to provide solutions that benefit all. And finally, one of the exciting things that we're doing, in addition to the My Brother's Keepers Challenge, is we also adopted the Fair Chance Business Pledge, one of the things that we have to talk about when you talk about violence prevention is workforce opportunities. And so we have localized the National Fair Chance Business Pledge that President Obama came out to address, making sure that there are job opportunities for those individuals who are second chances, and so that we can make sure that families have opportunities to have stable income. We know that jobs can help stop bullets. So we have been working with businesses that have come out vocally and said, we will provide job opportunities for people even if they've made mistakes in the past, so long as they've met certain criteria and they show an effort to move forward. That is very critical, because now you have job opportunities for individuals who now can provide good quality services and supports for their family, including their youth. And when we talk about violence prevention, we have to focus on generational change, working with youth at a very young age and providing them the supports and wraparound. In order to do that, we also release funding in partnership with the Board of County Commissioners, as well as the Children's Board, to provide summer programming for those youth that would not normally have access to it because of income or because of transportation. And we know that it's a gargantuan task, but we know that at least 1,400 kids this summer had access to quality programming that would normally not have that, including meals for breakfast and lunch. So we are doing a lot. It's a holistic thing in nature. We're also focusing on mental health. We, you know, when we see all these incidents of shootings and violence in our community, we have to start addressing mental health and substance abuse services. So we are rolling out mental health first aid training and youth mental health first aid training in our communities, and we're training residents to know how to become community first responders. So it's you have to have so many different strategies to address just saving one life. And, you know, we've moved the needle. We are starting to see some good gains, and we have to continue the conversations together, law enforcement and community working together to protect our kids in the future.
That's great, Trace. So if anyone wants to get in touch with you, how do they find out more about Hillsborough Safe and Sound?
The first thing, the easiest way, is to go through our website. It's www.safeandsoundhillsborough.org. And certainly our contact information is on there, my contact information, our staff, and our committees. Okay. So again, www.safeandsoundhillsborough.org.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend Irby and Freddie Barton. You can see things are happening on both sides of the bay. I think it's time to take another call. If you want to ask a question or make a comment about preventing gun violence in the Tampa Bay area, press zero. Go ahead, Laura. We can take the next call.
Great. Thanks, Congresswoman. The next call comes from Martha. Martha, you are on the line right now. Go ahead and ask your question to the Congresswoman.
I'm actually a person who has never been stopped by the police. I have also not ever acted suspiciously, and I have never committed a crime. If I were a policeman nowadays, I would be deadly afraid of being shot, because as a citizen, I'm more afraid of another citizen shooting me than the police. I believe, to begin with, it starts with gun control. There are too many guns out there in the hands of people who shouldn't even have guns. I believe the waiting period should be not 3 days, but 6 weeks, during which time these people should be thoroughly investigated before they're allowed to get a weapon. That's the first thing. The second thing is, there are certain weapons that should be banned and not even be sold. You can't use an assault rifle to go hunting or anything like that. Why would you want to buy it, and why would anybody sell it to a common law-abiding citizen?
Well, thank you, Martha. I agree with you. I'm co-sponsoring legislation for background checks. In Florida, you're right, we have a 3-day waiting period for a handgun, but that does not apply to military-style machine guns, assault rifles. And there are large loopholes out there where if you're doing a private sale, they don't require a background check. And I understand from law enforcement officers that a lot of these gun shows, it's entirely too easy to go to a gun show or even online and purchase purchase weapons that really are should not be on the streets, because what we heard from Chief Ward is we don't have in many places there gun owners are not responsible, and many of the weapons are stolen from cars, and we've got to do better. So I that's why I'm co-sponsoring legislation to require background checks. And at the very least, what we wanted in Congress was to have a debate and at least allow us a vote on that. All of the polls out there say that people strongly support common sense background checks for gun sales. Even NRA members, the majority of NRA members, support it. So I'm going to keep working on that, and we've got work to do in Tallahassee as well. So, Laura, I think we can take the next call.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Sherry, you are on the line with the Congresswoman. Sherry, go ahead and ask your question. Sherry, are you there? Sherry? Oh. I think we may have lost Sherry. Hold on one second. The next question we are going to go to is Bob. Then Bob from Tampa, you are on the line right now. Please go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, good evening, Representative Castor. Yeah, my question is, why isn't there more education about the essence of what a gun is and what it represents? We have a Second Amendment that guarantees us the right to bear arms, but we don't have a comprehension, I don't think, of this country, just what the meaning of a gun is and what a gun can do. So I think we need education out there in every area to explain to people what your responsibility is when you have a gun and the whole process of the gun itself. I think if people had a better comprehension of it, they might have more respect for what guns are and what they can do. So that's my comment, and I thank you for being there.
Thank you very much, Bob. You know, there that reminds me, there is a very interesting case on appeal to the Federal Appeals Court out of Florida, and it will, I think it tells the story about how powerful the NRA lobby in Tallahassee is. And some of you may remember this, that the Florida legislature passed a law that restricts doctors and pediatricians from talking about gun ownership with parents and kids. Just they simply want to say if you have a gun in your home, it would be wise to lock it up. And the NRA encouraged the legislature to pass that law, and now the pediatricians have challenged it, and it is on appeal to the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeal. So we can all watch for the outcome of that legal challenge down the road. But I would certainly think that our pediatricians have First Amendment rights to be able to encourage parents and families to keep their guns locked up. That's the lawsuit commonly known as Docs versus Glock, filed by doctors and medical organizations and other groups saying that they have free speech rights and a law shouldn't prevent them from encouraging safe gun ownership. If you want to make a comment or ask a question, press 0, and you'll be put online.
Great. Thank you, Congresswoman. Our next question comes from Jim. Jim, if you'd like to go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, and welcome. I certainly appreciate this opportunity, Congresswoman. This is probably one of those most complex and difficult issues that the American people face at the current time. It involves several factors, among which is a certain level of anti-humanism, a refusal to recognize certain other people, and expressed mostly through racism, and which together also includes or produces fear. And this is the thing that, of course, produces the widespread interest in guns that is sustained by a popular culture that promotes guns in almost every movie and TV show that you see. So there's so many different things. There's also the factor of that there's an economic and political incentive that sustains the entire cycle, some of which we're seeing now. And all of this may seem to inspire hopelessness and despair, but I think that a little reflection on the interconnectedness of all these factors, we have to deal with them more or less all at once, because they are all insidious and they're all undermining the strength of people and their democracy. We have to find ways to involve people in a meaningful and active governance and personal interaction, and most certainly more social life. The social life of communities, it seems to me, has deteriorated substantially, so that there's too much emphasis on entertainment and too little emphasis on common discussion, analysis, meet your neighbors, exchange views, and being a true citizen of the community. I know that this is glittering generalities, but I think these are the dimensions of a problem that we are facing now. And I certainly do appreciate the practical measures which are being undertaken that have been discussed thus far. But there are overlying and very large social forces at work. So we have to be aware of that in whatever we're doing.
Well, thank you, Jim. I agree. And that's why I wanted to make sure we spend a good deal of the call on what's happening in our communities, and why Reverend Irby with the City of St. Pete, Community Intervention Director, talked about Not My Son and what they're doing with community members on the street, and Freddie Barton summarized what's happening here in Hillsborough County and Tampa and with Hillsborough Safe and Sound, because I do want folks to know that there are these broad outreach efforts that are underway, and we've got to build on them and do more, because it is, America does have a problem. You know, we have over 30,000 people who die every year from gun violence. Gun violence kills far more Americans than terrorism. In fact, in the last 12 years, gun-related crimes claim more lives than AIDS, war, and illegal drug overdoses put together. And it scares me to know that 7 in 10 active shootings are in schools and businesses. And I don't. One of my great fears is that there's going to be a moment of silence on the floor of Congress for a mass shooting in the Tampa Bay area, and I want to do all that I can to prevent that from ever happening. So thank you, Jim. Laura, we can take another call, and then we'll go to Dr. Carolyn Collins, who's here in the City of Tampa on the Citizens Review Board.
Okay. Our next caller is John in Tampa. John, you are now live. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. First, I want to preface this. I'm a counterterrorism expert and a small arms expert for the federal government. I've been doing that for over 35 years. And your narrative about the ease of availability of military-style assault weapons is an outright lie. And I would like to know why you continue to propagate that, because a military weapon is a full automatic. And an assault rifle, there's a specific type of weapon that's called an assault rifle. It's a medium power rifle with select fire capability. Those are highly regulated and cannot be accessed by the majority of the population. So why do you keep pushing this false narrative?
Well, thank you, John, for your call. But all you have to do is look at the style of weapons that have been used in our mass shooting, from Sandy Hook to Aurora to Orlando, right down I-4. And these are what people, when a gun has the ability to have a high capacity magazine, kill 10, 20, 30, 40 people in 1 or 2 minutes, most people don't think that's acceptable. And that's what I term a military-style weapon. That's not a hunting rifle. Now there are a lot of details and ins and outs on how you define certain guns, but I think we can all I think that the vast majority of people agree that those types of weapons that have the ability to mow down people in a nightclub or a movie theater or a school should not be on the streets. So, Laura, we can take our next.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Next question comes from Jacqueline. Jacqueline, you are now live. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, good evening, and thank you so much for this opportunity. My question is in regards to the training that the police are supposed to receive, I'm wanting to know, will there be a cross-cultural training incorporated in that module or in that, you know, in that training so that the police are more familiar with the communities that they're serving, you know, like the African-American and the Hispanic communities, that they're more familiar or, you know, with those communities? Because I think part of the problem is that there's a misconception in terms of the demeanor of African-Americans and Hispanics. And so if, in my opinion, if there were some cross-cultural training incorporated, maybe it could, you know, shed a different light and maybe change attitudes and hopefully behaviors of the police officers whenever they're interacting with these communities.
Jacqueline, that's a great point, and I don't think Chief Ward is still on the line. Chief, are you still on?
Yes.
Oh, good. Maybe you can address that on that kind of training.
Well, that was one of the things we focused on early on when I took over as chief, was that implicit bias training. And at our first session, we invited members of the community to be a part of it. We had a lot of our faith-based leaders, members of the NAACP, ACLU, and all of our command staff. We were the pilot for the program. We went through it, and after that, we integrated that system into our department and invited other community members to be a part of the following sessions. One of the things that we actually advocate for is our Citizens Academy. It gives the law enforcement and the community an opportunity to interact with each other and pretty much learn each other and their habits and behaviors, kind of breaking down those barriers. It's open discussion, and there's kind of nothing's off limits.
Yeah, thanks, Chief. And I want to share with you that I'm also a co-sponsor of a bill, H.R. 2302, that would provide additional resources to local law enforcement organizations to do just that, because oftentimes when they have to go through that kind of training, that means come off the beat. We don't want folks to come off the beat. We want the full force, fully trained, and that does include that kind of sensitivity training. And this is a good time now to ask Dr. Carolyn Collins to talk a little bit about what the City of Tampa Citizens Review Board is and what they are doing. So, Carolyn, are you on the line? Can you give us an update?
Yes, I am, and thank you so much for inviting me. And I've been listening intuitively to those individuals who have spoken, as well as the questions that were asked. Let me kind of get started by simply saying that despite all of the controversies with the Citizen Review Board that was formed in Tampa, I personally feel that not only the one here in Tampa, but if you look in Philadelphia, if you look in Las Vegas, if you look in California, if you look in Pittsburgh, if you look in Atlanta, Orlando, around the state of Florida, there's a need to get something started in every community. It may not be exactly what individuals may want it to be, but it's important that you get something started, start the dialogue, start their interaction, and then hopefully it will reach the level that so many people want it to be. Atlanta has had one for a number of years. It's only recently that they've gotten some of the protection that people feel they need. And if you look at some of the general reviews of the Citizen Review Board, you will find that many of them may have subpoena power, never used it. You would find that many of them do not have subpoena power. So I think the key is the Citizen Review Board, that individuals were selected by both the mayor and the city council. We meet on the fourth Tuesday of every month in City Hall at 6 p.m. We invite the community to come. There's a public comment section for the community review policies. We review policies and procedures and make recommendations. We review cases. We have asked for more difficult cases, but we're less than just about 6 months old, and we went through actually the training. The chief mentioned the Citizen Academy. We do encourage, and I clearly encourage, as president of the NAACP, I made sure that every year when the academy was going on, that we sent officers, executive committee members, and encouraged people in the community to go to the academy for the 6-8 weeks. It's really interesting. It does allow that interaction. It gives you a better understanding. And then it puts you in the role play situation. So the Citizen Academy is good. And coming out of that, we also encourage ride-alongs. What we're trying to do with the Citizen Academy, and we worked and supported the chief when he did the district workshops in the meetings, community forums, that is, in each of the communities. And one of the things that was proposed at our last meeting is that the workshops, that perhaps in each of the districts 1, 2, and 3, and hopefully we could even use the citizen review meeting on a quarterly basis to have these on an ongoing basis. We did send that recommendation back. We wait for the chief to tell us if he thinks that that may be a good idea. We don't dictate. We try to collaborate. And we're looking at how we can communicate by listening. We heard this at one of the recent forums. We want to listen. So that's why we ask people to come and talk to us during the public comment section. And we also want to be more visible. And there's some suggestions that have been made, and hopefully we'll follow up on those, on how we can be more visible. I've noticed a number of the Citizen Review Board or that they have around the country with different names, but somewhat the same. They have their own website. They can communicate. Some have staff. Some have budget. We do have a secretary that worked closely with us, as well as a captain from TPD that helped with the cases, and they come and present them to us. So I think it's a start. It's something that we did not have, and I've heard all of the comments, and I think we do need to do this because we do not want you to ask a silent prayer on the floor in Congress. It's just a fear. Individuals are really afraid, and we've got to figure a way how to address this. The young man that was just shot in Miami, and the officer himself apparently admitted to the young man and to another officer when he asked, "Why did you shoot me?" And he said, "I don't know." I think officers are afraid, but I can tell you, African-American men, now women, and African-American parents have had to say to their children, I have two boys, and I've always had to say to them, this is what you do if you're stopped by an officer. And I'm hoping that we could work more collaboratively with the chief as well as with the sheriff, and we need to kind of carry some of these into communities. I know there's some things that are going on in the schools, but I think if we can get in the community and get into the church and allow the pastoral communities across the city to allow them to come in and do some of this education and training, and I agree. What is a gun for? My heart was heavy when I looked in the paper and saw the lady whose daughter, I guess, brought a gun home, thought she had taken the bullets that shot and killed her mother. These things are happening far too often because a lack of knowing what those guns are for. And the Citizen Review Board is to look at policies, look at procedures, to look at cases, to simply evaluate those and hopefully be able to do some other things that we will probably be recommending over this first year that we have. And we want input from the community. Tell us what you want, and that's what we will try to pursue. It is not for us. It is for the community that we represent.
Thank you, Dr. Collins. Laura, we probably have time for another question at the end here, and I want to remind everyone we do have an online poll going on that you can weigh in on. Do you believe that Congress should debate and vote on gun safety proposals? Press 1 for yes or 2 for no. And go ahead, Laura. We can take one more call, I think.
Great. Our next question comes from Priscilla from West Tampa. Priscilla, you are on the line. Go ahead and ask Congresswoman your question.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for conducting this teleconference. It's been quite enlightening. I've learned a lot. First of all, I know that you in Washington must face a great challenge presenting the issue with respect to gun control, especially assault weapons. I, for myself, after, you know, hearing all these tragedies, especially the most recent one here in Orlando, you know, it'll be just a matter of time before it happens in Tampa and someplace else. I know what you're doing, and you're just one person representing us in Washington, D.C. What can we as citizens here in Florida do to help you get the message across to those people over there?
Well, thank you, Priscilla. And this is an important issue, and I hope it's not destined to happen here in the Tampa Bay area. So everyone's got to work on this. I think it's very important that you talk to all policymakers, from your city council and county commission and sheriff, police department, to your members of Congress. This is an election year. You're going to get calls. You're going to get people knocking on your doors. You can express your opinion to them. It's also very easy to communicate with policymakers because everyone has telephones, email, Facebook pages, Twitter accounts if you're into that, and you've just got to be, people have to participate in this democracy, and I encourage you to do it. Let's do everything we can to prevent a tragedy any tragedy related to gun violence from happening in this area. So I want to share the results of the poll so far. This is going to go on after people hang up. So far, 55% of people on the line tonight said yes, Congress should act on gun safety legislation. 39% said no, and 6% said neither. So I want to thank everyone for participating tonight. Thank you to Tampa Police Chief Eric Ward, Reverend Irby from the City of St. Petersburg, Freddie Barton from Hillsborough Safe and Sound, and Dr. Carolyn Collins from the Tampa Citizens Review Board. If you were not able to get through with your question tonight, please stay on the line and leave me a message. It is so valuable for me to hear from you so I can take action on your concerns and take your stories back to the U.S. Capitol to demand action. We clearly have a lot of work to do, but I know the Tampa Bay community is strong, and we can work together to prevent gun violence. Laura, I'm going to turn it over to you, and thanks again to Chief Ward and our community experts who are with us tonight.
All right.
Thanks
thank
for
you,
having
Congress.
Me.
Thank you for everyone who joined the call and participated tonight. And just want to remind you, if you'd like to leave a comment for the Congresswoman, please just stay on the line and you'll have the opportunity. If you ever need to contact Congresswoman Castor, you can do so by calling our Tampa office at 813-871-2817 or our Washington office at 202-225-3376. Also, please feel free to go to our website at castor.house.gov or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/USRepKathyCastor or on Twitter at USRepKCastor. Thank you again for participating, everyone, and have a great night.